Also, I want to start by welcoming James May. He's very kindly agreed to come to open the exhibition. I want to welcome also Lord Smith and the team of judges from the Art Fund, whom we have been spending the morning with and who've been learning about the exhibition and, of course, the remarkable history of Bletchley Park. And I want to make a special mention now of representatives of our distinguished veterans, Lord Briggs, Captain Joe Roberts, Robin Painter, and Jean Valentine. As I said, they represent the distinguished body of veterans who still play, remarkably, an active, critical role in this place. And if you just think about it for a minute, that's really quite a particular feature of the story of Bletchley Park. This particular exhibition has some remarkable features, but I want to pick two out in particular, two particular reasons, if you like. It's a collection of Alan Turing's academic works, and you know these are quite complex. They go back, in many cases, to the 1930s. They're of, you've got to be careful of language and not overusing superlative adjectives. These are critical documents in the history of the development of computing and information technology. And they're quite difficult to explain, and we have sought, and I think with success, to present them in a way and with summaries and explanations attached to them which allow you quite quickly to take in what it is that they represent. And they're here, this is the second point, along with personal artifacts which demonstrate Alan Turing, the man, the scholar, the sportsman, and the individual. I think it's worth saying, too, something about how this came about. And I've been asked by our Director of Museum Operations, Kelsey Griffin, not to mention her or to highlight her role here, but I'm going to very unusually completely ignore that and just tell a little story, which goes back to the 12th of November 2010, when Kelsey spotted that the collection of documents and papers was due to be auctioned in 11 days' time at Christie's. And the guide price for the sale was $300,000 to $500,000, so it was clear straight away that this was prohibitively beyond the resources of Bletchley Park to bid. And so there was a sort of, she let out what would have been once upon a time just a sort of slight gasp of despair and frustration about this, but of course now, thanks to information technology, you don't have to just gasp, you can tweet. And she tweeted that if only the trusts could afford to buy these for the museum and its visitors. That tweet was picked up by an enthusiastic supporter of the trust, Gareth Halfacree, who is not here today, who immediately launched a campaign over a number of days, which raised over £28,000, £28,500 to be exact. Sue Black, who is here today, moved in and worked with Google, and together, and with Google, and Google stepped in with $100,000 at very short notice to support the Bletchley bid. And then a further significant sum came from a private donor. The auction took place, indeed, 11 days later, on 23rd of November 2010. The park was able to bid £100,000. The bidding, unfortunately, began at £200,000, and the collection was unsold at £240,000. In other words, the auction didn't reach the reserve price, which meant that the collection, of course, was at risk, maybe for an overseas buyer and going out of the country. At this point, Simon Greenish, who was then our CEO, stepped in and entered into energetic talks with Christie's and with the National Heritage Memorial Fund. At the end of that process of hard work, on the 25th of February 2011, Bletchley Park Trust were able to announce that the collection was saved for the nation and that the National Heritage Memorial Fund had stepped in to meet the required amount. So, some thanks in place. Of course, despite her blushes, to Kelsey, to Gareth Halfacree, to Sue Black, to Google, like Google, to our private donor, and to Simon Greenish. I also want to thank, at this stage, those who put this exhibition together. That's moving from what's happened in the past to what has got us here at this particular moment. The Turing family, who are represented here today, who have, as you will see, donated a significant number of personal and rather moving personal artifacts, which talk about not just Alan Turing himself as an individual, but also his family context and some moving items there from his mother. To Professor Jack Copeland, the curator of the Turing Archive at the University of Canterbury in New Zealand, who has produced the summaries, which I rather admire, which managed to put into a few words the complicated thinking and concepts which are in the papers. To Gillian Mason, who has put together and delivered these displays. To Jason Gorman, for running the software Craftsmanship 2012, which has helped to fund the magnificent display cases. To John Harper and his team for rebuilding Turing's speech encryption device, Delilah, which Robin Painter will show you later on. So those are the key thanks. I'm sure there are other people I should be thanking, and I haven't done so. Those are the key thanks I want to make. You can see the effort that has gone into this over the last 1.5 years. It's enough now from me, but I want to hand over to a rather more interesting presenter, Captain Jerry Roberts, one of our veterans who worked as a codebreaker here in the Second World War, and who will give you some insight into his personal reflections at that time. And the last time I saw him do that, by the way, is when Her Majesty the Queen visited us last July to unveil the memorial outside, and she was held enthralled by Jerry Roberts' account of his experiences all those years ago. Thank you very much.